Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.
Interest rates are at record lows, but inflation is ticking up. So what can savers do? How would a reduction in tax relief affect your retirement? We await the government's new pension policy. And where can you find an asset that has risen 18% this year? Try looking down on the farm. All this to come in this week's FT Money Show. I'm Matthew Vincent, and I'll be giving you the lowdown on all of these money matters in downloadable form with my colleagues from FT Money, Alice Ross.
Hello.
Steve Lodge.
Hello.
Tanya Poley.
Hello.
And our special studio guest, Steve Latto, Head of Pensions at Alliance Trust.
Hello.
So let's start with the money news. This week's Consumer Price Index figures showed that prices rose by 3.7% in the past year, up from the 3.4% recorded last month. And this is eroding the value of savings. Research by Money Supermarket shows that higher rate taxpayers with £30,000 on deposit have effectively lost £206 since December due to higher prices. To counter the effects of inflation and tax, basic rate taxpayers now need an account paying at least 4.6% to gain any benefit in real terms, and higher rate taxpayers need to earn 6.17%. But with the Bank of England base rate about to break a modern day record for stability, there's little chance of finding that kind of rate on the high street. Research by Candid Money shows that the majority of high street bank accounts pay less than 0.1%. Steve, to invert a Tory Prime Minister's phrase from yesteryear, we've never had it so bad, have we?
Possibly, Matthew. I mean, it depends. I mean, it's, saving investments about choices, of course. So in some cases, some of the rates out there are quite good. On the best accounts, you can get between 3% instant access, up to about 3% on ISAs, 3% fixed rate bonds for 1 year, if you're prepared to lock your money up for longer, 5%. Now, you're absolutely right. If you take those inflation figures and look at the real return, the rates look, you aren't making a real return. But frankly, you never make a real return over the long term in cash. That's what all these investment experts love to tell us. So it is a question of choices. I mean, you could say that by comparison, for example, high yielding shares look more attractive than using cash.
But in terms of what's been happening to rates, we know that the base rate has been absolutely flat as a pancake for, 15 months now? About to hit 16 months probably. But we've seen savings rates come down, haven't we?
Well, they have, yes, dripped down, really. Of course, there was something of a lag effect initially about a year ago when rates hit their low, this record low of 0.5%. And you've had sort of competitive uplift over some periods, say, for example, on instant access accounts and ISAs, particularly at the end of the tax years. But yes, generally, the trend has been down. So now, as we say, you're struggling to get 3% on instant access. You're struggling to get a 3% on a 1 year bond, which of course begs the question why you'd bother to tie your money up at all. And there may well be an argument for people who are looking for higher rates and wanting to tie up their money, lock into those high rates, to wait for possible inflation fears to get worse and then lock into high rates. The flip side of that, of course, is you could be locking into a time when rates are going to go up and instant taxes could be about to catch up.
Good point. Now, being a slightly cynical soul, I wonder if some of these rate cuts we've seen recently are not to do with the fact that there's this new rule about having to notify all account holders about changes to rates. Is this a case of banks and building societies just trying to get their nasty little cuts in before they have to contact people?
I'm sure there's an element out there. Clearly, they're not going to admit it. Some of those advance notification rules, which will require you to be directly, personally notified before they make the cut to effectively give you advance notice to sort of find something better, some of them came in last November. It does depend on the account, does depend on the institution. And to be fair, some institutions appear to be adopting that practice even in advance of them formally needing to. These rules are currently, the final rules are currently with the FSA, and, you know, we should hear something very soon on all institutions having to adopt it. But yes, I think there is absolutely nothing wrong with being cynical in this world, Matthew. It normally means you're right.
Indeed. And just for those listeners who are looking for a reasonable interest rate, good place for their money, any one or two accounts you'd pick out?
Well, there are some regular savers out there. Northern Rocks launched a 5% regular saver, which unusually has no penalties on withdrawal. It only lasts a year. It's the typical trick with regular savers. You can only put £250 in a month. There are also current accounts out there as well. I mean, again, small beer, but, you know, the Santander Group particularly is specialised in this, offering about 6% for the first year only on balances of about £2,500. But I would mention one other thing, which I know we're going to come on to as well. I mean, many experts are saying, well, why not, if rates are so low and you should be topping up your pension, why not get that high rate relief and do something a la high yielding shares through your pension?
It's funny you should mention that, because yes, we are coming right onto that. So thanks for that, Steve. And for details of the best instant access accounts, fixed rate bonds and cash ISAs, look out for Steve's article in FT Money with this weekend's FT. Still to come on the show, money doesn't grow on trees, but does it grow in fields? We do some digging. First, though, pensions. This week, the ConLib Coalition published a 30-page document called Our Programme for Government. And FT Money, we all turned straight to the section that was headed Pensions and Older People. Not because we're planning on retiring just as yet, but because we're still waiting to find out if tax relief on pension contributions is to be limited to the basic rate, as the Lib Dems wanted, or kept at your highest rate of tax, as the Tories proposed. There was no detail in last week's 7-page document, but there was no more detail in this latest document this week. But advisers are worried. Blick Rothenberg warns that if higher rate relief is abolished, thousands of people may stop paying into their pension funds, and a survey by the FT magazine Pensions Management has found that removing the relief would cut demand for pensions by 20%. Alice, how serious an issue is pension tax relief, do you think?
Well, firstly, there is the question of whether it will actually be restricted completely. I mean, we've had higher rate tax relief for some time, and what's been announced in the past year is that is being restricted from April 2011 for anyone earning over £150,000. So they will be tapered down to 20% basic tax relief. Why should that concern me? A lot of people who aren't earning 150,000 might ask. You know, that's, it arguably doesn't seem that unfair. But what people warn is that this could have a kind of a trickle-down effect. So if you have companies where the senior employees aren't paying into pension funds, and then they don't really have an incentive to pay into a pension fund, or an incentive to make the pension fund of their company good, that could have a trickle-down effect on other employees. I mean, I'm here with Steve Latter at Alliance Trust Savings. Is this something that you're already seeing, these really high earners just being turned off pensions altogether?
I think higher rate taxpayers are definitely worried about the changes and how that will affect them through time. I think some of the important things to remember are that this tax year, you know, these individuals can still contribute and can still get tax relief at the higher rate, you know, usually up to £20,000, perhaps more in some cases. So, you know, looking longer term, yes, it may be an issue. But we also need to bear in mind the other changes that the government's introducing. You know, we're talking about increasing capital gains tax rates to perhaps 40% for non-business assets. Now, individuals with significant earnings may also be subject to capital gains tax in respect to their assets held outside a pension. But inside a pension, people need to remember that there's no capital gains tax to pay on any investment growth that takes place. So, yes, there's a downside on the way in, but looking at it in the wider context with other tax changes that may be introduced, pensions are still definitely attractive for individuals.
And this is actually something that's being suggested by advisers at the moment, isn't it? That you could crystallise your capital gains tax outside your pension and then effectively get your pension to buy the investment and then take the cash out of your pension?
That's it. There's two ways of doing it. Firstly, you can sell the asset outside your pension and then buy it back inside your pension again. There is one other alternative that's available. You can actually sell an asset that you own in your own name into your pension fund directly. So in the case of unquoted shares, for example, or an asset that's difficult to sell that you want to keep, you know, one way is selling that asset to your pension. So you give the asset over to your pension fund, and in return, your pension fund gives you the market value of that asset. It's still a disposal for capital gains tax purposes, but you still have the asset.
Right. So there are these options for investors still with pensions under what you're describing there is what people often call a bed and sip arrangement. But on the more positive side, there is some good news that has actually been confirmed for pensions that actually came out in this policy document by the ConLib coalition, which was that they have said they will scrap this rule that they currently have that when you hit age 75, you have to buy an annuity, which is another turn off for high earners because they may have built up a lot of money in their pensions and they don't really want to buy an annuity and you know, potentially hand over all their money to a life insurance company and not be able to pass any of it down to dependents. Do you think that this is good news, therefore, for these people?
That's something that we strongly welcome. Yes, it is definitely good news. We still don't have any details with regards to what exactly will be done or when it will be done. There was just one sentence in the document. You know, so the bigger issue is actually what happens on death and what the position there is. So, for example, today, if you're withdrawing an income from your pension and you're greater than age 75, on death, your pension fund must be used to provide an income for dependents. Or, if you don't have any dependents, the only tax-efficient option is for your pension fund to be paid to a charity. Mm. Now, what we would like to see at Alliance Trust Savings is the ability for that pension fund to be passed down generations, not necessarily outside pension funds, but allowing individuals to perhaps pass that fund down to the pension fund of their children or even grandchildren in some cases. So it's staying inside a pension wrapper. There's no tax consequences for the government, and it helps to solve the future problems potentially down the line with regards to people not saving enough in pension funds.
I mean, that could be another way where maybe not being so harsh on the high earners is actually going to benefit, you know, other members of society that aren't high earners.
And again, you know, it's about making pensions attractive. You know, the important thing for the government going forward is to try and encourage people to save. We know there's going to be a crisis down the line if people aren't saving enough, so they need to make pensions simple, understandable and attractive. Now, they can do that without necessarily causing a huge cost to the government at the moment by just, you know, doing the types of things that they're talking about.
Well, if they can make things simple and understandable, I think everyone will be pleased and slightly amazed. Thanks very much for that, Steve and Alice. And if you'd like to know what you can do with your pension or what you should be doing with your pension before these new government rules come in, have a look for Alice's article in the money section of this weekend's FT and also on the website at ft.com/money. And finally today, farmland. In the year to date, the price of farmland has risen from an average of around £5,000 an acre to more than £6,000 an acre, as the supply of land has been constrained and demand for tangible assets has risen. Farmland also comes with an attractive inheritance tax break, which perhaps looks even more attractive now that the Tories' £1 million exemption has been shelved. But if you're not exactly a hands-on investor, and certainly don't fancy getting your hands dirty, how can you harvest any of these potential gains? Now, Tanya, you've well, not exactly been down on the farm, but you've been certainly looking into this. What's the best way to invest?
It really depends how much sort of active kind of involvement you want to have with the farmland, really. If you are quite keen, maybe if you're a wealthy investor, you're quite keen to actually have a kind of country jaunt where you can actually go actively work the land. That's one way of doing it. You have to actually own the land for 2 years to be able to take advantage of these IHT benefits. But if you don't actually want to get your hands dirty, you can set up a contract in place of another farmer, but it has to be based on a kind of shared profit arrangement. So you actually have to be shown that you are having this kind of semi-active involvement with the land. For those that probably want to have a bit more of an indirect involvement, there are a number of funds that are available in the UK to invest in. One of those funds is called the Farm Fund, which is managed by this manager called the Manor House Farms. It's basically structured as a limited liability partnership, which means that the structure actually lets the person, the investor, have kind of joint ownership of the land, which then is meant to actually enable them to take control of these IHT benefits. The minimum investment for the farm fund is actually £25,000, so it's another way of getting kind of a cheaper access or exposure to farmland. Another fund that investors can access is the Braemar UK Agricultural Land Fund. That's actually an open-ended fund, so it differs from the FAR fund, which is closed-ended. I guess it's actually based on the Channel Islands Stock Exchange, so there is that kind of worry there that it's not actually going to be regulated by the FSA. But it's got a smaller minimum investment at £10,000. But actually that fund, because it's a OEIC, it won't give you that access to the IHE benefits. The fund manager actually said to me that he still thinks that it's a good place to invest because he reckons farmland doesn't have this correlation to commercial property or equities. So it's an important area to maybe have in your portfolio.
Well, that's the one thing I wonder about, because there is the old phrase, you know, invest in land, they're not making it anymore. But 18% is, you know, it's quite a big rise for, you know, just 5 months of the year. Can these drivers constrain supply and everyone wanting something that's, you know, tangible and muddy as an asset, can they drive it higher or not?
I think you can, because ultimately a lot of people are saying we're facing a kind of food shortage problem across the world. So in the next sort of 10 to 50 years, I think the situation is just going to get worse, which is actually going to push prices up even further. You also have the fact that there's actually very limited supply on the market. So again, that's another way of kind of pushing prices up more. I think they're seeing that a lot of private investors are actually very interested in it. I mean, Mark Faber, even earlier this year, he was talking about two places to invest would be gold and farmland, because obviously sort of tangible assets that, you know, are always going to be there.
Yes, well, and both have done extremely well so far this year. So I suppose it's important then, just finally, for investors to decide on the best way to get exposure for them. You mentioned that there are ways to go in, get inheritance tax, IHT relief, and not get your hands dirty. But if you go into a general agriculture fund, if it says agriculture, it may not be investing in farmland.
No, that's right. I mean, there's commodities, all these different areas where actually some of these other agricultural funds actually invest in. So I think farmland seems to be one that's really doing particularly well. Not so sure about sort of the kind of wheat prices and all this kind of thing at the moment.
So, yes, make sure you know what you're getting into. Thanks very much for that, Tanya. And for more on investing in farmland and those funds that qualify for tax exemptions, look out for Tanya's article in FT Money with this weekend's FT. But that's all for this week's FT Money show. Remember, you can find weekday news updates and all of these stories on our website, ft.com/money. And you can read and comment on our latest blog posts at ft.com/moneymatters. We'll be back next week with another financial lowdown in downloadable form. But until then, it's goodbye from me, Steve, Tanya, Alice, and our special guest, Steve Latto from Alliance Trust.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost £27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.